Hello and welcome to episode 117 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
This is Fat Asian and I play... I'm going to say Minions.
That's one thing.
That's fine.
This is Keith and I play Craigs.
This is Colin and I play Scorn.
This is Chad and I play Trolls and Pokemon and Hearthstone.
Damn. This is Scrump and I play Circle.
All right. Well, welcome to another fabulous episode of Muse on Minis, one that will actually hopefully go up on time.
And Dota 2.
When was the last time you played Dota 2, Chad?
Like yesterday.
2 days ago.
Oh, okay.
All right. Acceptable answer.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Well, I'm going to add fantasy football and fantasy football.
I played Final Fantasy VII 2 days ago.
Final Fantasy VII football?
No.
Final Fantasy Football 7?
I traveled all last week for work, and I played with myself every night. I mean, we can... Mm-hmm.
So why didn't you list that at the start of the podcast?
I play with myself.
Yeah. I do. Any of you that denies that is a liar.
I'm not denying it.
You're not denying it. Yourself.
I'm just not proclaiming.
I would never deny that you play with yourself.
Smooth. Nicely done.
Wait.
Do we have any news or announces? I don't think so.
I think we have some tournaments to talk about.
Yes.
We can do that on the next episode.
Well,
we can, all right. Let's do it on this episode really quick. Hold on. Let me pull it up.
It was stated on the previous podcast, but just a reiteration. On November 9th at Mayhem and Ames, I'm running a 50-point Steamroller 2013. It's
have you considered moving that to Des Moines?
Two lists
going to fill up.
We can't move
divide
it
and conquer one.
How come?
And because there's something else in Des Moines that day.
Ugh.
It'll be great. It'll be great. It's going to be a fresh new scene for all those.
We're going to call it Showdown in the Shoebox. Dun, dun, dun.
It can fit 32 players.
Did you say you had some announcement to make for parking?
Oh, yeah. So, I will post where to park on that thread and make sure everyone is well aware of where they can park and not. For some reason, Ames, unlike every other city in existence, has their meters running on Saturday, which is stupid. Right?
Yeah.
It's pretty stupid.
Also, it's homecoming that weekend for Iowa State.
Yeah, that's not an issue.
It's an issue, and Nick doesn't even know it.
It's a non-issue.
It might be an issue.
Sounds like an issue.
It's parking pretty hard in campus town.
Which of these have we done?
He doesn't think so, but...
Look, okay. If it comes down to it, we will make a park... You can park at Walmart, and we will shuttle you to the tournament.
I have a truck. We can just sit everybody in the back of the truck.
We'll borrow John's van, and on the side, it will just say, like, Mayhem Shuttle, spray paint it on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I dare you to spray paint it on.
Okay. It's done.
I double dog dare you to spray paint it on.
I have to.
Now, yeah. Now
I will give you €6 to spray paint it on.
That's like you're just $8.
And none of us are protecting you from my wife. She's really nice.
I just have to find.
Did you see what happened when the dog peed on the floor?
I didn't. And I'm glad I wasn't here for that.
Did she take the dog
and, like, shove the dog's face in it?
No, but did you see how the dog, like, knew she was in trouble and ran around my wife to go upstairs? Like, did the whole juke and then went to hide because she knew she was dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not nice to kill dogs, John.
He's Korean.
Yeah, it's how
it Oh, my God. I was going to make
that joke.
Wow. I was going to go...
I was slow on the uptake.
That's supper tomorrow.
I'm done.
War Machine.
Yeah,
War Machine.
So that's it. November 9th, Ames, Iowa. The sign-up's on the mom boards. 50 points. $10.
Chunky is going to be there, so...
Yeah, it's going to be an international tournament.
So it's his fault that there's no parking on campus town because he came down on a bad day.
Anyway,
yes.
News and announcements. I think this is where we left off. Mahu posted about the Crucible, which is a pretty good turning into a pretty big event in southern Florida, I believe. They've got two qualifiers. They've got a November 16th Dogs of War Gaming in Palm Bay, Florida. It's a 50-point standard steamroller, and you play each list at least once. Winner of this steamroller automatically qualifies for Crucible Masters, so that's kind of cool. So you can actually get into the Masters there ahead of time. And then they also have at Sci-Fi City in Orlando, Florida, January 11th, they have a 50-point standard steamroller. Again, play each list
There's
once.
A Sci-Fi City in Florida?
Yeah.
No, it's...
You know the crazy thing? I just came from Orlando, Florida. I probably should have put some feelers out. I might have been. I didn't really have any time anyway. But
you go to Disneyland?
Disney World, yes.
All right, that's the one in California.
Universal Studios also. But
you didn't go to Epcot?
No. God, Epcot is the worst.
I had, like, no time.
Also, that's part of Disney World.
I had no time.
Epcot is a separate park.
Wait, I thought Disney World was a overarching thing that encompassed, like, five parks.
Why are we...
People need to know this, John.
I think Disney World is a specific section of the park.
I think we're getting into semantics. All right. And then also the actual Crucible itself is run from February 28th through March 2nd. It'll be at the Allure Resort and Spa on International Drive in Orlando, Florida. Oh, wow. Actually, I was in Orlando, and I didn't even realize. This is pretty cool.
So there's going to be a con there in, like, a month. He totally could have gone.
No.
I could have stayed there. Save myself so much money on travel.
Anyway, they have a lot of events, so I'm sure there's something that you guys could find interesting to do. It looks to be a 3-day event. It starts Friday at noon and goes through Sunday. Check it out. We have got a post on our forums that has all the details if you're interested. And it's also going to be a War Machine Weekend Invitational qualifiers for those of you in the Southeast. Probably worth a drive as qualifying for the Invitational is a big deal. I think that's the one that Brian White qualified in this year.
Oh.
I'm not going to lie. That's a pretty sweet con because unlike Gen Con, you know, which is in the heat of summer in Indianapolis, it's in Orlando, Florida in December.
In the heat of
winter.
Well,
it's not December. It's February, the end of February, beginning of March. February 28th.
Same thing.
Yeah. Right. Well, I just don't want to confuse people with the dates.
Well, Keith said in a month, and I was like...
Oh, I thought he said November or something.
Oh, the qualifiers, the pre-qualifiers. So there's also Carnage posts about a Who's the Boss charity event on December 14th. We will most likely be there. We've made that every year. Event is amazing.
That's when I'm going to run my food machine.
Sorry, Crump.
We will leave you behind, and no one will be at your food machine.
That's fine.
Fox will be there.
And then there is on November 9th, this date sounds familiar, at Toy Wiz, looks to be a food machine event. It's a 50-point steamroller baseline with Death Clock. Entry fee is 10 cans of food, and they're doing it for the food pantry of the Thessalonica Christian Church. First place, they got prizes for first place and most cans donated. There's a thread. It looks like it's in New York, Nanuet, New York. And then there's another event we got a lot of events. Cosmic Oasis in Richmond, Kentucky. This is December 14th, $20 buy-in, registration at 11, dice drop at noon, 50-point steamroller, blah, blah, blah. Prizes. First place, $200 start credit. Second, $100 start credit. Third, $60. Fourth, $60.
That's a monster payout.
That's a pretty big payout.
And a brand new car!
Sounds like Mayhem level payouts. So, Richmond, Kentucky, December 14th, probably worth a drive if you like credit. And then it looks like Dice Jojo in Chicago on November 9th. This is apparently a very popular day for tournaments.
Talk about this one.
We have one in Des Moines, one in Chicago, one in Richmond, Kentucky, all on November 9th, for those of you keeping score at home. It's the Chicagoland Games Dice Dojo. Registration time is 10, start time 11. It's free. Two lists require Death Clock. Cut to the top four after four rounds if there's not one undefeated player. And it doesn't say... Oh, they're going to do SR 2014 beta. It's interesting.
Woo!
Doesn't say a point level, but I'm going to guess 50 points.
See, Colin, they're running a 2014 beta the weekend before War Machine weekend.
No, it is. I'm sorry. I lied. It is it is 50 point. All right. So those are the events. If you guys also would like us to mention your events and pimp them a little bit, we have a forum thread on our forums. That's the only way we take those submissions now, because otherwise we can't keep track of what we've talked about and what we haven't. So please find that sticky thread at MiseOnMinis.com/forums and let us know about your events because we're interested. And if Crump and Colin would stop scheduling events on the same days as everybody else's, we'd actually get out and go to some of them. Maybe we should go anyway.
Wait, nobody's was this week. Oh, no, there was a convention.
There was, RockCon.
Yep.
Good job, Colin.
Where was that at?
Rockford, Illinois.
No. That's not anywhere near the Rocky Mountains.
No, not exactly. That's where all the Madison folks were and why they weren't at the tournament this weekend.
It's in the worst state in the Union.
Going to Tower, and Madison doesn't show up there. They should come to Tower again.
I'm not one to keep score, but Carnage is. And apparently we have scheduled events like the last nine times on the same time as a Madison event.
That's actually exactly why I made the joke that my food... when I talked about doing a food machine tournament, Carnage sent me a Facebook message saying, hey, we're running this charity event on December 14th. Don't schedule your food machine then. Which I have subsequently scheduled.
Hey, does he not know how it works with us?
I'm going to Who's the Boss.
Yeah, I'm also going to.
We're all going to Who's the Boss.
Oh, man. Hold on. Never mind. Continue. Clifton Klein did something amazing. And
he's done lots of amazing
things. I'm going to ask him if I can share it with people. So look for that at the end of the podcast.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
This past weekend, which is still true. Yes, this is still true. This past weekend, we played in a tournament that Colin ran. At the Demoir store.
With the costume contest?
With the costume contest.
On my anniversary?
On John's anniversary.
By the way, that Guess costume who was there? Contest...
The costume contest was amazing.
Was legit. So, let me explain how the costume contest went down. I woke up that morning, 50-50 on going to the tournament, and then I thought to myself, wait, I bet that no one is actually doing a costume. I have a Batman hoodie in my basement that I'm going to throw on, and they just hope that I win the costume contest by virtue of being the only one in a costume.
Default.
I woke up for the tournament, and I was like bleary-eyed, like registration started in about 5 minutes at the time when I woke up, and I was looking at my closet, and I was like, ah, I have that houndstooth jacket, which I could call a costume. And I bet no one else is going to wear a costume, so I could win the costume contest by default.
And then Lance... wore his Firefly t-shirt that he wears all the freaking time.
Yeah, like, I don't think he takes it off, actually. I think it's just underneath his shirt. Yeah. His other shirts. Yeah.
And then he decided to wear, instead of normal jeans, camo jeans, and then he was... "Quote unquote Jane Cobb."
What he had the hat.
Whatever.
He had the hat.
He could have not worn the hat and also called it. It was just a winter hat. It wasn't like.
So you're saying I could have worn this and gone as a Metroid?
Probably.
Yeah, you could have gone as that chick.
You would have taken fourth, but there was only three
Metroid.
Places.
That guy, Metroid.
With
the Mega Man arm.
If I would have known, I would have showed up and just said, "I'm going as Chili."
No, you would have been that guy. That, like, Gungan Psy.
You would have been Psy.
Yeah.
I guess we're both Korean.
You would have had to do the dance.
We all look the same to you, Colin.
Throw on some sunglasses. Rock it out.
No, just all he says all day is, hey!
So, yeah. Apart from the costume contest, it was a good turnout. I think 18.
Yep,
18 was our number.
It's actually a good thing that I... didn't plan on going because my flight that I was supposed to fly home Friday night and get home like at 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed my connection because our plane was delayed 2.5 hours.
Yikes.
Yeah, so I didn't get home till the next day until 1 o'clock, which is why you guys didn't see me until like 5 o'clock because I went home and showered, picked up my wife, and then we went out for our anniversary.
Aww.
And I was nice enough to take her by Mayhem to visit with you guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She was really impressed.
Yeah, the previous night I hung out with Nigel until like 3 in the morning. It was sweet.
Wait, why was she impressed? It's Mayhem.
It's an impressive story.
So yeah, Nigel and
that was an awkward
Jamie came down from Minneapolis. Nigel brought his Ocean's 18 and some Butcher 3. There's a lot of Butcher 3 there, as Chad Gar will tell you.
He loves Butcher 3 now, right?
Sorry, I have to issue an apology to Chad Gar. Because round one, he had to face Butcher 3, which he did not want to play all day. He was like, oh... there's one matchup I want to dodge. It's Crix and Butcher 3.
Oh, thank
round
God there
one,
were six Butchers.
There's four Butchers.
I thought there were six.
Only four.
Oh, okay.
And round one, he gets paired up against Nigel, plays Butcher 3, and he actually proceeds to win the game with Epic Hexeris, killing
squeaked
Butcher 3.
Squeaked it out.
Yeah, squeaked it out. I think it was some dice happened.
He told me that he got some pretty lucky dice.
Yeah. But then like he was like, oh, barely got it out of that one, Colin. Don't give me Butcher 3 next round. He gets paired up against Butcher 3 again. And he's like, I hate you, Colin. I never want to play in one of your tournaments again. And then he loses the second round.
No, you need to absolve yourself of the situation. Just be like, it's Doyu. It's not my fault. I'm cleansing myself of this.
It wasn't me.
Not only that, but actually I think Butcher 3 is legitimately a hard matchup for Scorn. Like,
I agree.
You kind of have to have a plan for that guy. Because, I mean, if you bring elephants, he's just like, Butcher 3 is just like, I love elephants. I'll eat me some elephants. And there's not a lot you can do about
He's just running across the battlefield. Elephant the elephants. Never mind.
He had an Ornn midwinter.
That helps.
Also Tiberian, which
also
I
helps both.
Mind.
Oh my god, I forgot Scorn they're, can take Ornn.
So they're both things that really help against Butcher 3, but they're not in and of themselves enough, I don't think.
Yep. And then, so round two happens, he loses. He's like, I never want to see Butcher 3 again in my life. And then everybody's like, oh my god, please let it be Butcher 3 for him. Everybody in the entire tournament wanted him to face Butcher 3 again. And then the random pairings go up, and he had to face Butcher 3 again.
Was it Lance this time?
Yes, it was Lance. Yeah.
It would have been so amazing if all four rounds he hit Butcher 3.
Honestly, Colin, and then, I know how you say it's like Doyu and all, but it is manually adjustable. So for the fourth round, I definitely would have put him in with Butcher 3. That's just how I teach.
Against the player who was XO.
So no,
he played Dan.
He played Dan. Oh yeah, you definitely should have done that.
So he in round four, he got paired up against Crix player, and he was like, oh thank God, Crix.
God, how often does a Scorn player say that?
Never.
About as often as a Troll player says it.
Yeah, never. Never in a million years.
But yep, so that's my apology.
That's amazing.
Yep, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Gar.
Are you actually sorry?
I'm not really.
I'm not feeling a lot of sincerity here.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, my smile isn't giving it away.
Well, man. I'm helping to translate your body language to the podcast medium.
Oh, yeah.
I played against four different factions.
Yeah?
Yeah, I took a P. De Negra list and the Epic Scar list that we built on the last podcast that Alex Grant stole.
I actually saw two copies of that Epic Scar list. Mm-hmm. I noticed that you and Alex are playing the exact same list.
Yeah, Alex Grant stole the list from me.
Very creative.
Yeah, you mean the list we built for him on the podcast?
He's such an inconsiderate.
How'd it play?
It was pretty good. I played it once. I was mostly trying to get my P. De Negra legs back under me. So round one, I sat down against Jose from, I think he's from the Omaha area.
Menoth player playing High Reclaimer. And
or if he was not from Omaha, he was from somewhere else in Nebraska, which makes it interchangeable with Omaha.
Oh, yes, it was Omaha, I believe.
I've seen that guy around. He's definitely a Nebraska player.
Hip, hip.
I think we played him in the team tournament way back when.
Was
when
it?
We went to visit.
But he was playing a list that I'd seen before. It was Severius 1 with Adjudicator, a Reckoner, and a Blessing of Vengeance, Errants, and Zealots.
I like it.
And it was annoying as crap.
It's a pretty good list.
The Errants jammed me up on the first turn, and I feeded on my first turn and charged pirates into them. Feeding on first turn at the Negra is not my favorite thing to do, but it let me get way up on the errants. And then I couldn't really do anything about the Zealots. The Zealots moved up and did their mini feat, so I just engaged them all with Nest Hunters.
Yeah, remember when I talked about that? You remember that little tidbit?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I've always done with Zealots, is just engage them with stuff. Like, Boom Howlers, they can't fight their way out of Boom Howlers. They can't really fight their way out of Nis Hunters. Well, they're actually better at fighting their way out of Nis Hunters than Boom Howlers if you can get one of them to throw a bomb and not kill the Zealot on the next Nis Hunter. Then they can start, like, suiciding themselves.
That's really hard.
Yeah, it is. But
what's their mat? Four?
Six. Well, four.
Four.
So they, seven. They need an ace to punch them.
They were actually so far up the table, most of them were outside of I.
Oh.
You mean Sevi was so far back on the table?
Yeah, Sevi was back behind an behind an obstruction because it was incursion. He was just like, I'm way back here. Good job, guys. it took us a long time to start scoring because the Adjudicator got up to contest the flag, so it wasn't until things kind of broke down and the Necrosurgeons could get through and drop six Mechanithralls into the Adjudicator that I was able to start scoring, and the Blessing of Vengeance was hanging out near the other flag, and I never really got a grip on him. I was able to keep that side gummed up enough, and he had one turn of bad dice where he could have scored a scenario point, but ended up not. But for a long time, he had way more points near the flags than I did, and I kind of felt the dice down itch. Like, if the round had been short, that I might have gotten dice down and lost, so I started, like, turbo-speeding my turns until I scored a scenario point. But eventually I was up one scenario point with a clear flag when dice down got called, so I ended up 2-0 scenario victory by Dice Down.
Sounds like a hard-fought victory.
Yeah.
It is really hard to out-attrition Sevi 1.
Yep. Especially when you can't get at him at all. When he has no reason whatsoever to spend to camp.
I'm actually considering playing that list as one of my two. Actually, that exact pairing. That's odd.
What was the pairing again?
High Reclaimer and Peace Sevi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His High Reclaimer list was very similar to yours. I'll talk about it in round three. My round one, I also played against an Omaha guy. Trainer is his name. I entered his name in incorrectly into the system, so I will forever remember his name as Trevor.
No. It is Trevor.
Oh, okay. So I played against Trevor from Omaha. His two lists, I think it was P7 and Harby. He ended up playing Harby against me. And I just, the entire reason I went to this tournament was to, one, win the costume contest by default, and two, play my P. Kruger list that I talked about on the dojo to give it some tournament experience as well as just the casual game experience that I'd had with it.
Is that Sayed or out already?
Nope, I had to replace them with Ferals.
The whole point of the list was the report. I'm like, I don't think that's out yet. So I'm testing it. Yeah, it's a completely different beast, but it's the same difference.
It has the same principle of...
it's exactly what we're talking about. It's like, oh yeah, I played the exact same list as you. I just replaced this with this, and this with this, and this with this. Chad,
we were talking about this exactly yesterday. Yeah.
So Crump was playing the list that he built, except for those 28 points.
Yeah.
27 points.
It plays very similar as to the Rip Horns, because the point is to put Lightning Tendrils on one and rocket it in, followed by another one and another
Absolutely. And it does. It's approximately the same damage output and everything, except they just die really, really easily.
That
compared
they
to the...
do. Let me tell you, Gaius Judo chopped one in half in like turn three or four. I don't remember, but so I got the die to go first. I just ran my druids on turn one. That's something I might want to change about the list. Druids having lacking AD could potentially be problematic for that list.
You talked about this last time.
Yeah, I know. And
do they get granted AD by their UA?
Yeah. Oh. So technically it's tactics, but
and some elemental protection and some devouring.
Yeah,
it's a pretty good 2-point UA
and the Beastmaster thing, which is really useful with some casters. So I just ran all my crap sort forward. I ran my Worldslayers pretty much full bore because across from one unit, he had deployed his Errants AD'd, and then from the other unit, he had deployed his Zealots. And I had positioned with kind of one on each side. But the ones across from the Zealots ran forward to hug a wall, so that way they don't get murdered by Errants who ignore my deflection and are really annoying. Setting up so that on my turn two, if he brings the Errants far enough forward, I'll be able to aim and just shoot them in the face, which I was for the most part able to do, killing a couple of Errants on my turn two. And I had on my turn two positioned a druid wall of clouds in front of my three heavies that were hiding all of my shifting stones as well. So the core destructive force of my army was pretty much protected by druids and deflection. The Zealots that he had deployed on the right side of the field had ran turn one, and then the middle flag disappeared, and on his turn two, they ran towards the middle flag to kind of get into the game, because otherwise they weren't going to be doing anything. And I decided not to feed with P. Kruger, because the turn he had mini-feeded them, they were pretty much going to be out of... I could keep the rest of my army out of their bomb ranges, or mitigate the bonds by, for example, putting my Worldstalkers on a hill that was close by. And 14 17s were pretty hard to kill with Zealot bombs. So, the...
Unless you shoot him with a Reckoner first.
Shoot my single wound infantry with a Reckoner?
Oh, I thought, never mind.
I was like, yes, then it would be doomed. but he did have a Reckoner in his list as well as the Avatar. And he had enlivened the Avatar on his turn two. And this is the turn where all my stuff is pretty much covered by Druid Clouds, so the only targets he has are Druids. He had charged the Druids with some of the Errants, who actually had been guided-handed, so they could actually hit the Druids. Otherwise, they need, like, nines. Killed some druids, and that was pretty much it with them. He had enlivened the Avatar and run it close to the middle flag, and then had the Reckoner, I think, walk up and shoot one of my stones. I think something happened. One of my stones in the big unit died. I forgot exactly how it died. I think it was a Rovend Reckoner just shot it, I think.
That's pretty standard operating procedure in the circle matchup for most Menoth players, so it doesn't seem unlikely.
Yeah, but now there's a Reckoner and an Avatar pretty much midfield, and so my turn goes, and I primal two of my Ferals, and Lightning Tendrils the one that's going to go after the Reckoner, because there were a couple of infantry models in the way. And this... I had some old stalkers clear those infantry models out, just in case. and had the one Feral go and kill a Reckoner, and had the broken unit of Shifting Stones, the one that had lost a guy, get teleported to box in the Avatar, and then my Feral Warpwolf got teleported by the other Shifting Stones to the back arc of the Avatar, so I killed the Reckoner and the Avatar before they ever did anything, pretty much.
That's bad.
Yep. And here's why they need to be Rip Horns. The following turn... So they're both primaled, so... They're not going to do anything the following turn, which my opponent took full advantage of, actually. Having killed all of his jacks, he pretty much just ran the choir to engage my Ferals so that they might just frenzy into an irrelevant choir instead of, like, one of the Rovend bodyguards, which I really wanted to kill. so one of the Rovend bodyguards was over by the Reckoner when I killed it and had taken some Electro Leaps and put some damage on him, so they were battle-driven. And then Rovend and that bodyguard charged that Feral, and the other one charged the other Feral, and pretty much judo-chopped both of them in half. And then on my following turn, I pretty much clear out all the rest of the Errants. So I still have a Feral left in the back, so, I mean, there's nothing left in his army that can really kill that Feral. If I can manage to kill, like, the
except
two...
Except for the choir boys. I mean...
Harvey.
Yeah.
Also a viable option.
Yeah. You say this a lot. Well, there's really nothing left in his army that can kill my armor 16 guy. Rewind a little bit. I have to roll the hit, but if they hit, or if it gets knocked down...
Yeah, but had those Ferals been Rip Horns, it probably would have been a lot different, because... I mean, Gaius and what's the other guy's name? Cassius?
Yeah.
Just each judo chopped those Ferals in half over the two turns that they got to eat at him. And I was just like, oh, I'll try to murder one to death since it's going to judo chop my Feral completely in half the next turn. I was just like, okay, this is the turn Kruger will feat. And I placed a template like on all of the bodyguards and the like remaining zealots and things to just like boost damage on the bodyguards to kill them, which then subsequently got martyred.
Didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
And I knew where that story was going.
And they're angry.
And then those Ferals got murdered. So yeah. It's like that unit of bodyguards killed two heavies pretty much. one of the Ferals had to get finished off by a devout that he had allocated focus.
That's even a slightly better point conversion than when Dougal and a Boker killed a stalker and a shadow.
Yeah, those guys are jerks. Just saying, those bodyguards are really annoying.
Actually, I have found that you put Rovend and Co. into your lists for Menoth side often, but often they just pay for themselves with the work they do.
Yep. Or
they often kill a heavy.
Or quadruple their points.
Yeah, yeah.
Rovend taking Fury off of things within 10 inches of him is also... Fury and Focus is also occasionally extremely helpful.
He can only take off one, right?
Or yeah, I used that to kill the Butcher once. That was camping.
I saw Chad get momentarily very sad in a game last night that he was ultimately going to win because Epic Hexeris emptied his Creel Stone.
Yeah. He moved Hexy all the way forward, and I was like, what the hell is happening? He's like, pop my feet. I'm like, okay, is he going to hellfire me or something? And then he's like, take it all out of here. I'm like, oh, God.
Why? Oh, God, why?
Hexy's like 7 inches away from all of my champions now, so I guess that...
We can probably manage this.
Yeah.
Which caster?
Gristle. P. Gristle.
Oh, man. So you're just like, Calamity?
No.
Pipe extra attacks?
I ended up not going for the Calamity because with Ashen Veil, he's too hard to hit. I didn't want to risk my game on an 11.
Ashen Veil and the sentry standing right in front of him made it at least challenging. And the long game was pretty good for him. But it was just funny to watch the
Watch him go through the seven stages.
As an old troll player, I can just imagine with a caster that has stuff to do. Like in that list, Gristle has Pyrotroll Animuses to get out there.
Yeah.
And like when all the two turns of Creelstone filling just go away, it's like
yeah, that's very sad.
Why?
And the whole thing powers down, like when Obi-Wan gets in the core of the Death Star.
God, I bet you just can't wait for three Eris.
It's like, no. Stop oppressing my people, Colin.
Bouncers.
We're going to start seeing bouncers. Actually, so, as an aside, we should see more shield guards than we do.
I agree.
Yeah, I saw a lot of really debouts because that thing's retarded.
Shield guard's pretty good. Round two, I got a rematch against a guy from the Minnesota area. I'm not sure. I don't think he's from Minneapolis proper. But
I know who that is.
Shannon?
Shannon. And he played Terminus against you, right?
He played Terminus against...
He's from Rochester, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds about right. He played Terminus against my E. Denegra and got scenarioed real bad last time we played. This time he played Terminus against my P. Denegra, and he went first, so there was a lot of pressure on me. I held my feet for a turn and got the pirates up into the raiders to start crippling grasped raiders to start killing them. They retaliated and didn't do a whole lot, and I kept out of threat range of all the mechanithralls, so he was jammed up like really in my face.
He didn't have Wither Shadow in his Terminus list?
He did, but the raiders came far enough forward and the Wither Shadow kind of repositioned behind Terminus to the point where they couldn't come up to spin that off, which didn't really affect the ability of the raiders to fight pirates because they're still mat six either way.
Yeah.
So on the next turn, Denegra even had to like shift a little bit backwards and feet to make sure that Terminus was not within 10 inches of her, because 3-inch Corbo plus 3-inch walk plus 1-inch death ride plus 2-inch reach is the 10 inches. 3, 6, 7, 8, 9. No, there's a way it's 10, but
a push.
Maybe you just be 10 inches away so that you're not within 9.
Right. Because I'm not within 9. Sure.
Yeah.
Or I just math it wrong. Or Terminus is speed 6 and I'm blanking on that.
He is speed 6.
He is speed 6. That's why it's 10.
Yeah.
I knew it was 10. So I was like 10 and a quarter inches away and withered almost everything. Ness Hunter's basically got the stand in place, like park and shoot. The pirates worked their way through the rest of them, and then like I ran up my Stitch Thralls to start the corpse fight. They were playing tug of war with his Stitch Thralls. I probably stole a lot of his Mechanithral corpses that way. So on the next turn, Terminus comes back, is only focused 4. His army can't really get into mine because I'm ranged enough that I pushed him off of me. Other than some created Mechanithralls are about the only things I can do real damage, and not very much at that, since the Stitch Thralls were mostly across from the Nis Hunters. So ultimately, Terminus didn't do very much. He just sort of moved up, but he moved up with only 4 focus camp instead of 6 because of the feet, and put a few Mechanithralls in front of, like, as many as he could, but I'd done a significant amount of damage to the army. I'd removed all 9 Brute Thralls. It completely wiped one of the Mechanithral units. So there wasn't a great deal screening Terminus.
You don't really enjoy standing in front of your army and during your feet turn. That Denegar army kills a lot of stuff really fast.
Yep. And then I was like, Terminus is still in my grill. Like, I felt like last turn was kind of a declaration for me, like, back off or die. At least until you can come back with a bigger camp. So with only the 4 camp and my Necrosurgeon's pretty full, I felt like I had a good chance to kill him. So I just got Denegar up there, the old Scourge Parasite. Had the Nis Hunters clear a path and then put Mechanithralls on him. And the second to last one took him to Tough. And he went down.
Boom.
A little bit dicey, but...
I think with 5 Mechanithralls on him, they were dice off... See, he was 22, so 19 dice off 4.
That's like
the third,
6, 12, 18, 24.
The third one should take him to Tough.
Yeah.
I wasn't paying attention because of battle reports. why didn't you Scourge and then Parasite from like a...
Arcnode?
Like the Scarlock.
From the Scarlock?
Like, you got a Scarlock, right?
Yes.
He's like jamming you up, right? Is there so was it like out of range or
The Scarlock, what was the Scarlock doing? He was mostly ghost walking stuff.
Okay.
To get the Ness Hunters back so that they could. I think that turn he ghost walked the Mechanithralls because some of them needed Pathfinder to
I'm just thinking, like, if he's moving his caster, like, all the way in front of your army, you should be in range of the Scarlock just being like, all right, I'll do the Parasite. Like, you just do the Scourge, boost to hit just to make sure, and then I'll do the Parasite.
Yeah, I just had Denegra within 4 inches.
That's, like, super all in.
Yeah.
Yeah. The same like
since, since coming back from Europe, he's a changed man.
Yeah, that's it.
Kill them casters.
All right, so my round two.
This is my skeptical phase.
The scenario for round two, Colin crumped it up hard in this tournament. Round one was incursion. Round two was close quarters. A classic crump style tournament. I played against Josh from Omaha. I actually played at Omaha like every round. But his two lists were P-Gristle, E-Gristle, and I was just like, man, I just want to play this Kruger list again. This will be sweet.
Damn it, he's stealing my thunder. I was going to do that at the LCQ.
No, it wasn't P-Gristle, E-Gristle. He was talking about P-Gristle, E-Gristle.
He had Family Reunion as one of his
Yeah, two. That's what it was.
Just as an aside, can you not take E-Gristle to the LCQ? Because it's going to greatly affect my plans.
Take Double Gristle to the LCQ.
Seems good. Seems real good.
Yeah. So I was going to play the P. Kruger list, and then at the last second before list choice, I remembered that Gristle 2 has Inhospitable Ground, which normally as a circle player, I don't give two flying Fs about.
But with Barrel Warp.
So at the last second, I audible to Keese Morvana 2 list, which I have had one game under my belt about a month ago of playing her.
It's pretty good.
And the plan was just to go on and win on scenario from the get-go because I was going second. And the board was very beneficial to me because there was a giant forest in the very middle that will obscure Gristle's sight to Morvana if Gristle is also going for her flag. And how the game played out was that he had put warders, one going to defend like his flag, and then one coming to assault my flag. And Gristle and Mulg was his battle group, as well as a Pyre Troll. Was going to go try to score her own flag. So I'm not sure how amazing of a plan that is, considering I'm second, so like I'll be the first person to score.
Mm-hmm.
Given he's got a lot of meat in that list, it was two units of warders and like Mulg, so he could come and contest my flag pretty easily.
But again, an angry stalker back there with rerolls.
Yeah. As well as
he can chew through some beef.
Yep. And whereas I can put skinwalkers on his zone, which warders can kill pretty good if I damage them. Otherwise,
if he pops his feet, it's still pretty dicey for a stalker to kill Mulg.
Mulg, yeah. I was just talking about warders.
No, the way it played out, Mulg was on the
those
side
two.
Of.
They're arm 23 as well.
But 21.
Yeah. If he pops his feet, I'm saying.
Correct. I would not try to kill Mulg on her feet turn.
The warders are the same armor as Mulg.
Yeah.
Not the same boxes.
Not when he puts them outside of the Creel Stone and her feet.
That was bad.
Which happened.
Don't do that.
But he had positioned Mulg on the side of the forest close to his flag, so I pretty much could ignore Mulg the entire game. Because there wasn't a way for it to get rush. And Pathfinders, so there was just this sad Mulg on a side of a forest that kind of sat around and cast its animus all game. But my plan from the get-go, score scenario points. So I'm deploying my skinwalkers on the left to go contest his flag, so that way when he goes to score, I can just jam a bunch of skinwalkers in there and just be like, here, deal with these. They're 12-18, which warders can kill, but not super reliably to kill all of them to take them off of the flag that I'm contesting.
And then you can just feed them back and be like, go again.
Pretty much what happened in that game. But on my turn two, there wasn't anything contesting my flag, and I went second, so I just got to score a point. And then the next turn,
oh,
I think...
God, that's rough.
The next turn, he had put, like, two warders within 4 inches. The blood trackers had prayed the warders that were across from my flag because I'm just like, I'm going to kill those so I can keep winning on scenario. And I just had Morvana walk up and just kill both of the warders because one of them was outside of Creelstone and feet. And then the other one was outside of Creelstone, I believe. But she ended up killing two warders, and then light calving back to her flag, which will score me a second point at the end of my turn. And then I had a stalker get cast sprint on himself and go and kill a third warder and then sprint back behind the forest to complete safety. So now I'm going to be up. I had feeded this turn to bring back the skinwalkers, as Keith had said earlier, because he was able to kill out all but two of them. I think two. No, there was one left, actually. Because I had one hiding, like, in the forest, hoping I would live as the kind of, like, insurance, because there wasn't anything that could get to it.
Yep.
Very much, except for, I think, one... what was it? Something judo chopped it to death that shouldn't have. But one that should have probably died over by the flag was a boss. So now Morvana has scored a second point, or is going to score a second point. She's camping zero. There's nothing that can get to her on that side of the table. The only thing in his list that can get to her is Gristle being fell called and like walking into the forest to then yell at her to death.
I do it.
So all I have to do to not lose is take my Reeves and run them into the forest so that there's like nowhere she can get a bead and not be engaged. However, due to my inexperience with the list and lack of play, I just timed out.
You suck.
How about don't spend all your fury?
I mean, I had to kill a warder. That was on my flag. So I could score a scenario.
So you got yelled at.
Yep. But I wanted to, if I had not timed out on the turn, I wanted to see how that game was going to play out, because I had actually killed all five of the warders that were my initial prey target, and I re-preyed the pyre troll that was over there. And there wasn't anything on that side of the board other than the pyre troll that was going to be able to like threaten my caster or come contest the zone. So how I thought the game was going to play out, if I could have gotten my guys and been there to safety, was that Mulg would have had to, like, over the course of a turn or two, like, trampled through the forest towards that flag to come contest it. Because I was trying to figure out how he could, what possible models could come to contest my flag, and there weren't very many.
So in my next round, I actually was playing against Josh, and he had... I saw the two lists, and I was like, family reunion. Well, I have P. DeNegra, so there's no earthly way he's going to play family reunion against me. And then, so I'm like, what's my plan for Gristle? And I was like, that's a unit of warders, and a Mulg, and another unit of warders. I'm like, I'm going to try Scar. Scar seems good. Not a lot of guns in that list, just Gristle. Should be okay. Gristle hates getting feeded on by Scar.
So you would be locked into her last round.
Yeah, also I didn't want to be locked into Scar. That would be bad. So I dropped Scar, he dropped Gristle. This was support by fire. I ran the Banes, both units, pretty aggressively, and played more conservatively with the Deathjack. He was not engaging. The Leviathan was picking off. He was reliably getting a warder a turn with three focus. Scar had a Skull of Skulls to hide behind.
I hate that stupid Skull of Skulls.
Oh my god, that table, when we were building that terrain, I was like, I want one table to be just miserable. And so I put the Skull of Skulls down.
This is your T.O. speaking, by the way.
Yeah.
I want you guys to be miserable.
I mean, at least
just
he's not,
one table.
At least he's not carnage.
We've talked about it before on the podcast, by the way, but just in case people were forgetting, the Skull of Skulls is a piece that is like a knick-knack antique that Dave found
at a gas station.
Gas station on the way back from recruits or something.
Yeah, like. It's like a resin skull made out of tiny little skulls. And
with skulls.
It's a human skull made out of tiny little skulls.
Yep,
it screams 40K.
It does.
So I put that on the table, and then later I was looking through the terrain, saw another piece that was a bridge made of skulls. I was like, that has to go on the table. And so I had that down on the table.
So you just made the table of the damned?
That's what it was going to be. And then
God,
we had incursion first round and realized the bridge couldn't stay there. Aww. So we had to take it out. I was really sad.
Why didn't you just move the bridge?
If we moved in anywhere, it would just become a dead space. So then I want it to be used.
So then it was the table formerly known as the Table of the Damned?
Yes. So I had Scar parked behind a Skull of Skulls the whole game, and her plan was pretty much assign 3 to Leviathan, assign 3 to Deathjack, like, every turn.
Good plan.
Camp 1, heal. My Necrosurgeon that stood behind her healed for 2 every single turn. She was like, upkeep 2 spells, get healed for 2. Upkeep 2 spells, get healed for 2. Upkeep 2 spells, get healed for 2. I was like, oh, it's precise. That's nice. Heals exactly the amount I'm damaged. And then I get, like, the turn I went all out and feeded and upkept 3 spells. It was like, heal for 2. And I was like, not as nice. Not as nice anymore. But, so my Bane Thralls got entangled with one of the units of Warders. And we're doing pretty well. Bane Thralls, they trade pretty favorably with Warders.
Particularly if you make any tough checks, like
the min unit of Scattergunners behind them were causing me some problems, but I was winning that fight. On the other side, the Bane Knights were not working as favorably against their unit of Warders. The 2 armor made a pretty big difference, especially because the Bane Knights slammed in. Their big turn was the same turn as the feet. He timed his feet well. So instead of killing 5 Warders when I charged in, like, all 9 Bane Knights, because he killed one with continuous fire to avoid the vengeance trigger on a turn that I charged 2 in. So instead of killing the 5 that I was hoping for, I got 2.
Ruh-roh, Raggy.
Which was less good.
God, I love Warders.
But I had all my Bane Knights jammed up in there.
It's still such a favorable trading situation just because they only make one attack. So you send in 9, then he kills 3, then
right.
You have 6 vengeancing and
yep.
Killing.
I mean, there are still some Scattergunners and a Gristle back there. And
how is he using his Crescendo? That's something I meant to ask Crump, too, like, because that has such an impact on the game. It can, anyway, especially
that's the knockdown?
No, it
leaves something
it's
in play.
It's the Mage Storm.
The Cloud of Doom, yeah, the Mage Storm Cloud.
Right.
It's not a cloud.
It's not a cloud. He was just kind of drifting it.
All right.
Out at me.
I would have been shooting it in spots and then trying to get those... Like, I would have been shooting it into, like, the clouds, like, your clouds of infantry and then, like, using it as essentially, like, cover for the...
Right.
Because, like, if a warder stands in the... Because it doesn't damage friendly models once it's on the table. And so then the warders can basically stand in it and attack the Bane Thralls out of it, you know, and be safe. And
right.
Does it trigger... Do you get the Mage Storm? It always happens.
Yeah, it's just a 4-inch AoE and then you leave it in play.
So you get, like,
it's just like a Scather template.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Except that it's like a POW 12?
Yeah, POW 12.
Instead of just an auto point?
Yep.
Yeah. But I was holding my feet, and I got Deathjack over to the flag that was contested by my objective, and he scored that one turn. So that kind of became the driving pressure of the game. Mulg was jammed up behind Gristle pretty much the whole game. I felt like he needed to get out there. He was kind of shying away from Deathjack for much of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really going to feat unless I could get Mulg to, or Deathjack to Mulg, like, and then so I get 2 turns to knock him out.
So his list was 2 units of Warders and Mulg and...
A Pyre Troll.
Some Scattergunners.
A unit of Scattergunners with UA.
Mm-hmm.
A Fellcaller, a Creelstone.
Impaler, I'm guessing.
Nope.
No Impaler.
No Impaler.
His battle group was a Pyre and a Mulg.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, the Crescendo did not come very far out, either.
Mind blown. I can just see Chad's face.
Yeah, I'm just like, wow, she's...
No.
Oh, my God.
No.
She's actually...
It's a ranged-based caster with range 8.
I really like the Scattergunners in that list, though.
They were helpful.
Yeah. I mean, the Scattergunners would serve the same purpose in my list as Runeshapers.
Yep.
I was definitely happy to have the more... free form, the not being cornered into using my feet in a particular way that game, because I got to hold it for quite a while. I wasn't pressured into, like, protecting a Kraken or anything like that.
It seemed late.
And I feeded quite late after I'd put on significant scenario pressure. An opportunity arose where Gristle moved up and came base to base with an objective. So Gorman hit the objective with a blind bomb and got feeded on. Tartarus came in and threshered two or three warders.
Three.
Killed 1, severely damaged 2, and got feeded on. The Bane Thrall officer went in and got feeded on, and the Blood Hag came up and got feeded on. And the Leviathan was feeded on, just because with admonition up, I felt pretty safe with the Leviathan. And Deathjack was just chilling back on the flag, like, don't need it. I'm good.
You guys are doing great.
Yeah.
View over here of the battle is beautiful.
Keep up the good work.
I'll score this point.
Yeah. And then on the next turn, he couldn't really meaningfully engage with Tartarus over there, kind of like blocking and being invincible. And with the Deathjack and the Leviathan positioned to clear off that flag, like I had it pretty thoroughly gummed up over there. So on the next turn, a few Bane Thralls and Blood Witches were able to kill the objective, and then I scored out.
Very nice.
So what did you think of the list?
The Scarlet?
Would you change it at all? You only played one game.
Yeah, I only played the one game, and I felt the matchup was pretty favorable for it. But I liked it. I liked it. Scar's focus, I felt like I wasn't using my focus quite as efficiently as I wanted to. Deathjack had like 5 and was just kind of dirtling with it. An Arknode would be very nice. I just don't think there's a viable way to get one in there.
I thought there was one. Huh. Oh, no, we ended up cutting it towards the end. That's right.
Yeah.
My round 3, I played against Jose, who took High Reclaimer, and I took P. Kruger, because I had already gotten my Morvana list out of the way.
And that was the Keith's opponent from round 1 that had Sevi 1?
Yes, Sevi 1 and High Reclaimer. I won the die roll to go first, just ran my entire army forward. His High Reclaimer list was very similar to the one you played that has 2 Bastions, Zealots, and then he had the Avatar and a couple of Solos.
Strong list.
Turn 1, he had High Reclaimer rock directly towards P. Kruger and placed 5 clouds. And then the Zealots ran up mini-feeded, and then Bastions ran behind them, like High Reclaimer does. On my turn, he did not block line of sight to High Reclaimer with any like Bastions or anything. So I was just like, oh. Well, I guess I'll just have P. Kruger walk forward, because I'm going to defeat this turn, to just clear out all of the Zealots. And he had placed Choir in such a way that my feet was going to be able to get them all. And the P. Kruger feed isn't very useful against Bastions anyway, so I was like, eh. Might as well just feed now, get these annoying Zealots out of here, and get all the Choir.
Yeah, that's great use of the feet. Anytime you can get rid of Choir against Mnoth, it's a win for you.
So. Yeah. But I had P. Kruger just Skyborn himself. I dropped Lightning Tendrils because of what I was going to do with my focus this turn. Skyborn myself, walked straight forward into the cloud directly in front of me and directly in front of High Reclaimer. Decided to shoot my gun at High Reclaimer. He was behind a wall, but he was like 2 inches behind the wall, so he didn't get cover. Boosted my gunshot. Need a 10 to hit because I'm -2 because of High Reclaimer's stupid clouds. Hit with my gun. Boost damage. 6-6-4. I was like... Wow, okay. Well, that's like 14 or whatever.
Like 12?
Yeah, it was
like, hold on. 6-6-4.
It wasn't exactly
16, 26.
I put like 12 damage on him.
26
so.
Minus 15 is 11 damage.
Okay. I put like around that much. I don't remember the exact dice.
So he's got 7 boxes left.
Yep, and then the Electro Leap killed the Choir, gaining him a soul. And I have 4 focus left, or 4 fury left on Kruger.
Seven, six, five, four, 3. Skyborn 2, boost hit, boost damage.
Yeah.
Trey.
Indeed. How the game basically ended out was that I subsequently feeded with Kruger, put the templates out where I wanted them, clipping a bunch of things, and then just decided to boost damage on High Reclaimer because it's dice minus 5, why not?
And he's at 7.
And then he died.
Dice minus 5, you need a 12 to kill him, which is, after the first bonkers roll, the second roll is not out of a normal deviation.
So the plan was for just Kruger to walk forward, put some incidental damage on High Reclaimer so that he'd be scared and cast less clouds for the rest of the game.
What were you going to
kill some stuff?
What were you going to do with Kruger?
I was going to have the little unit of Shifting Stones teleport forward the big unit of Shifting Stones and then have him teleport back to safety behind a wall.
Okay. I was like, this does not seem like a good plan.
Nope. Was a perfectly fine plan. Keith was watching the game and he's just like, Kruger's just going to go back where he was and be like, Def 21.
Yep. You give up the big unit of Shifting Stones for a really, really, really strong feat. Seems fine.
Yep. So that was That's game three.
That's the hardest part about High Reclaimer, which is why I'm not sure if he's good or bad, because he randomly dies to the most random janky stuff.
If he had put a Bastion in front of High Reclaimer, I couldn't have gotten him.
Yeah. But, so. I mean, it's not just that. I mean, lots of weird things kill that guy. I was toying around with a High Reclaimer list with two Devouts in it. Just to help keep his squishy butt alive. Plus, Devouts, they do pretty good work. So, it's not like they're bad.
I mean, one Devout would have kept that game alive.
Yeah, yeah.
In the finals, I played against Dan Sammons, who had Butcher 2 and Butcher 3. Considering how he had designed the lists, I was pretty sure, and he even said so earlier in the day, that Butcher 2 was definitely his quick drop. So I was like, well, it's P. Denegra time. See how many things, how many Doom Reavers I can shoot to death before they get into my face.
That Butcher 2 list should be fine against Krix in general, except you have too many guns.
48 Doom Reavers. I've got 13 Pirates, 10 Nis Hunters, Gunner Dougal, Doc Killingsworth, Bosun Grogsbar. Let's get this.
They are
Let's
all
get this done.
Pretty much fearless.
No Hawk, so not so much.
But you got a guy with coins.
Only 5.
Those go fast. Like,
should have put a
up to 7 checks a turn or 8. No, you can make way more than that, actually.
Yep. So I got the first turn, which I felt was extremely important and very helpful. I moved up Denegra very aggressively on this turn because my thought process was I will most likely have to back up. I will not be able to move forward and feet. I'm going to have to feet and retreat. So on after he ran up on me, I was like, okay, here we go. Withering. Back the truck up. The Nis Hunters laid out 10. The Pirates laid out about as many. Dougal got 3, I think. Doc got 1. Bosun got 1. The Night Wretch got 1. I killed everything in the Withering. On his next turn, he feeded. Butcher was only able to catch like 5 Pirates in the feet, I think. And he only got 3 or maybe 4 rage tokens. And my tough checks were good enough to prevent like something bad from digging into my pirate lines. And the Nis Hunters stand up pretty well to Doom Reavers. They don't roll 8s often enough to the few of them that were in charge range to really do much damage to the Nis. So I weathered, and after the feet turn, I feel a lot safer. This is outflank, so now and the feet got put a devastator in one of the zones. So I'm going to have a hard time clearing it. And the other zone, the pirates were not close to fighting through it. Like, Fenris wasn't really going to die. The other important thing is that turn I mini-feeted with the pirates to buy them some time. Because on his turn, when he ran up on me, the Nis Hunters failed 2 command checks, siphoning 2 coins off of Rock Bottom, and the pirates failed 1, siphoning a 3rd off. So I toughed them this turn. I did not tough them the first turn. And mini-feeded with them, so I'm holding 1 coin. The Nis were able to, after killing a bunch more Doom Ravers, pretty much, there's like 2 left, I think, on that side. 2 and a Devastator. And after the Pirates got their work done on that side, the following turn there was like 2 and a Fenris and a Butcher. On his next turn, Butcher came in and just did his initial. He didn't roll very much focus, so he wanted to keep camping it. He killed 1 of the models that he threshed, or Homicidal Maniac'd. Or maybe it was 2. It was not enough to give him auto 7 the next turn. And then I sort of, with the Butcher up in there, and the Pirates broke at that point, because I had toughed them again, and they ran away from the Butcher. So I was looking at it with a Butcher there. I could definitely get Denegra close enough to attempt the Scourge Parasite again, but he was 1 or 2 higher armor than Terminus had been, and I wasn't feeling super confident about the number of Mechanithralls I could get there or the math. So I sort of did a parting of the Red Seas and left Butcher gummed up with half my army and like got the rest of it as far away as I could on the other side with Denegra so that he couldn't hopefully not surf and get through. and started my campaign against the Clamjack. I parasited it and started slamming Mechanithralls into it and doing big CRAs with the Nyss. That turn, I was able to knock out both arms, but not kill it. So it's good and dead next turn. Butcher on the next turn does not roll very much focus. I think it was 3 or 4. And he takes a long shot to try to surf into me, which was Ravager himself, and then charge. Do like, because he can do long charges past models because of 360,
mm-hmm.
and do a long charge past a model, Dougal, actually, to try to get into the clump next to Denegra, and then he has to surf quite a ways to get to Denegra.
He can do it.
He can do it, but Dougal toughed it out and was just like, "You shall not pass."
tough checks.
And he only had one chance to try again, and Dougal was just like, nope, Doc's still alive. And he just made it.
You are so frustrating to play against. Every time he needs a roll, like if he needs to go first to be in the game, he goes first, mm-hmm. or to give him a huge advantage.
Mm-hmm.
If he needs a tough check to win the game, he'll make that tough. Mm-hmm. If he needs to pass a command check to not lose, he passes it.
Doc was just aiming like a boss and throwing knives at Doom Reavers the whole game. He's just like, ah.
How often do you get Doc to do work? That never happens.
Every game.
He killed like 2 models. It was pretty sweet. Maybe 3.
Usually he is the first guy to get scalpeled out and killed.
No guns in this list. Butcher's blunderbuss is it.
I know. I'm just saying. You never get work out of that guy because he's always target priority number 1.
Did you put anybody in a bag?
No press gang.
Oh, no press gang.
So that's no right. Bag to Doom Reavers.
Boo. Boo.
They certainly would have ran away without Hawk.
Yeah.
Love
that chick.
So yeah, after he failed to surf, that's one of those, like, you're out of focus, and you're too close to Denegra. So she charged him and did the whole Scourge Parasite poke, and then some Mechanithralls.
Seems good. Congratulations. You won another tournament. Gotta stop ducking me, Keith.
Yay. Yeah.
I got booed when I won, which I felt was gratifying.
Seems like, shouldn't you be accustomed to that now?
Yeah.
You got booed?
I look forward to it.
Nobody roots
at
for
the
Keith.
Tournament?
Yeah. Yep. And first place is Keith. Really boo. Yeah.
I mean, I understand the feeling, don't you?
Oh, well, I mean, I haven't been to one of these Des Moines tournaments in like years.
I thought they were saying woo.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
It's just Keith always comes in first at our local tournaments, and it's just free money at this point.
Nate beat me a while ago.
You should stop scheduling them when we all have to work and stuff.
Yeah, I know,
or
right?
We're out of town.
Maybe don't schedule them on my wife's anniversary, or my anniversary.
Wait, what?
Wait, let's not.
Lance? Timestamp that so that we can point Mandy to it.
You guys are the worst. The world. Just as an aside, I'm going to complain about this for a second. As long as we're talking about me getting thrown under the bus,
we weren't talking about that.
Yeah, we.
Okay, never mind then.
Okay,
moving on. You weren't talking about telling my wife that I just screwed up.
And then post tournament, Nigel and Lance and Marshall and I played the Firefly board game.
Is it pretty good?
It's pretty sweet.
Jamie didn't play with you.
Jamie had turned in because they were doing the 2-day doubleheader and went to Mankato to play on Sunday, I think.
Yep.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was considering it, but then I was like, nah.
Damn, nope.
I'm out. Maybe. Yeah, there's no way I could have gone. My head hurt so bad on Sunday that I was crying. Literally crying.
So was that because it was your anniversary on Saturday?
Yes. No. Anyway.
All right, Lance.
That was a Battle Report-filled podcast.
Whoa, we're not done. I promised the listeners something at the beginning of this podcast, a sweet little treat at the end. Clifton Klein.
Guess what day it is, Nick?
God, that was not the treat. Clifton Klein has made something pretty sweet for the War Machine Hordes community. In the event you want to run a Who's the Boss tournament and do not want to create a giant wheel of death or whatever, he has created an automated version where you go to a website and click what faction you play, and then it kind of wheel of deaths it for you, and you end up with, like, I just clicked Kador and got Circle or Boros. I got Baldur the Stone Soul. So
nice.
I'm playing
Trolls.
God, no. No, no, no.
Trolls. I'm playing Trolls. What's my caster?
No, you. Plus no Roots of Earth for Kador. That's bad.
Let's see who wins.
I don't like it.
Let's see who wins. So,
Behemoth with
so
Roots
Chad
of the Earth.
So Chad playing Trolls is getting
Harbinger!
Yeah! the wheel spot right before that was Captain Bartolo.
better. Much, much better.
John gets Playing Protectorate. Oh, no, he plays Minions now. Hold on. I need to... Ah, screw that. Playing Protectorate gets Caliban the Gravewalker.
Nice. He'd actually be pretty good in Protectorate if I had an Arc Node.
If you randomly put an Arc Node
Keith
in
playing Crix
you
gets...
would in Who's the Boss.
Yeah, you definitely play with an Arc Node in Who's the Boss.
Keith playing Crix gets...
You're like, oh, Sorcia. Sweet.
Lord Tyrant Hexaris. I think that's one.
Yes.
Colin playing Scorn gets...
Crix's balls and Who's the Boss.
Karchev.
Captain Jeremiah Craig.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
Full tilt!
Full tilt bronzebacks with heavy cav rules. No.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. That'd be amazing.
This is a pretty sweet thing. I'm sure we'll put it in the show notes.
Colin would have light cav drakes.
Yeah!
That's pretty good, too.
With guided fire.
Oh, light cav drakes is amazing.
Guided fire with drakes seems good.
Because they get to walk forward, spray, and boost a bunch of stuff, then light cav back into the beast handlers that can remove the fury.
How would they even need to... They have guided fire.
Boost damage.
Okay.
Just boost damage forever.
Anyway.
Sounds amazing.
We should have saved this for the next podcast.
Indeed.
But all right.
Well, thank you for tuning in to this episode of Muse on Minis.
Okay, we'll post the link in the show notes.
Yep. This has been John.
Keith.
Colin.
Chad.
And Crump.
Thanks for tuning in.
John, what day is it?
Guess what day it is.
No.
Guess what day it is.
Mike.
Hump day!
You guys ruined this for everyone.
Oh my God, Colin!
I'm out.
The other day, I was at Jordan Creek with my significant other to go see a movie, which was terrible, by the way. I should have trusted Josh, but I was bored and not paying for the movie anyway. Don't go see Gravity. Throwing that out there. Like, I knew it was going to be bad.
I'm glad I listened to Josh.
But I got to see it in real DXD 3D. That's three times the D of a regular movie.
So it's 60?
I don't know.
No, 90?
I don't know. But it was a nice movie theater. And then as we were walking out, I was just like, ugh. The character development in this movie was atrocious. And then the person behind me just says, that movie was so intense! It was intense! I was just like, nah.
You should have turned around and been like, extreme!
But while we were at the mall, I saw this sweet shirt that just is red with a camel on it and says, Hump Day.
Nice.
I was going to buy it for you.
I was going to say, like, are we just sponsored by Geico now or what?
Pretty much, right?
Wait a minute. We should do that.
I work for Nationwide. Anyway, we're on your side. This podcast is on your side.